The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. We do not have a quorum at this time. As soon as we do, we will officially call the meeting to order. What we have today is House File 1849. I will move that when we have a quorum. Solicitor definition provided for nexus purposes relating to taxation. And if you'll look at your well-written agenda, it says testimony will be taken today from those who have concerns with House File 1849. Now, folks that are here with us today, I'll just go through the list of who I have that would like to testify with concerns. We have Carrie Rocha, Connie Arnold, Jamie Delton, and Matt Lemke of Winthrop and Weinstein. Is there anyone else, just to get a show of hands, who would like to testify with concerns? Okay, we'll stick to this unless we need to change it. So, with that being said, is Carrie with us today? And the members, if you join us, please, here. We're going to listen to testimony, and members then can ask questions of the testifiers. And then there are a couple amendments. And just so you know, we will not be taking a vote today. We would lay it over for possible inclusion in an omnibus-type tax bill. So with that being said, Carrie Rocha, did I get that right?
Close. Hasha. Portuguese, I know. It's crazy. It's an R, but it sounds like an H.
Okay. Well, okay. I you know, I don't like when people pronounce my name wrong. Hasha.
Yeah.
Or when they spell it wrong, you know, they say, is there one G or two G's? And I say there's two G's. And so they go G-R-E-G-G, then there's three G's. Oh, okay. So please present, you state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and then present your testimony. And welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you. I'm Carrie Hasha. I'm from Maple Grove, and I am opposed to the affiliate nexus tax. And a little bit about me, I'm the founder of a website, pocketyourdollars.com, and that's a free online resource that some 600,000 Minnesotans use annually to help them spend less on their everyday expenses, things from groceries to kids' clothes as people are trying to live within their means in this tough economy. I am also an affiliate of Amazon and most every other large online retailer. In fact, I support my family of four via my website and the income generated through my affiliate relationships. And I'm opposed to the tax, like I said. And my understanding of what theoretically here is supposed to happen is if this tax is passed, then someone like Amazon would be deemed to have a sales tax nexus because of their affiliate relationship with someone like me, and that would, in theory, generate new revenue for the state of Minnesota. But based on the experience of other states, that's not what's going to happen, because what will happen is Amazon will simply sever their affiliate relationship with me, and that will exempt them from having to collect and pay the sales tax. And in the process, it will jeopardize my livelihood. And the 500,000 people who use my website that have come to rely on that to help make their ends meet will certainly be impacted, as well as the 10 part-time employees that work for me at this point in time. So I would really ask that this committee consider what has happened in Rhode Island and in North Carolina, where affiliate nexus taxes have been passed and are being considered, repealing them is being considered now because they generated no new revenue. And I would suggest that a better solution is something that would happen at a federal level, which is on the table right now, and it has support of online retailers like Amazon, support of big box Main Street retailers, it has support of affiliates like me. And so I would suggest that the legislature pass a resolution that would encourage Congress to resolve this issue at a federal level, and with a solution that would indeed generate revenue for Minnesota, which we know that we need, and would preserve my livelihood. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Hosha? Representative Lesh and then Lanchester. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, now, Mr. Chair. So Ms. Hosha, I haven't been following the news on this that much. So Amazon no longer does business in Rhode Island then, or those other states? They pulled out completely?
Well, let's explain. They do business. They may sell products to residents of Rhode Island, but what they've done is sever their affiliate relationships with the small business owners that had an affiliate relationship. An affiliate relationship meaning I can post a URL on my website that has a little tracking mechanism so Amazon knows I referred the person to Amazon and I earn a commission as a result. And so Amazon has severed relationships with people who have that type of relationship in Rhode Island and in North Carolina. so they don't have to pay the tax. That's the only requirement for them to have to pay this tax, is that they have to have the nexus, which comes through having these affiliate relationships. Easy enough, they just terminate the relationships.
Okay. Representative Lesch? Representative
Lencheski? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, it's not really a question, it's just a comment thinking about the testimony. To you, Mr. Chair, as the author, I mean, I recall when we looked at this bill in the past, the bill actually was a revenue raiser, as has been testified, that, you know, there's folks want to do this because it would bring in revenue, and it might interest the public to know and this testifier to know that actually the bill in its current form, because the revenue estimates have been redone over time, because Amazon and others pull out, as you correctly testified, this bill actually is not a revenue raiser. There is a modest amount, $3.9 million, but I think it would be hard to argue that any author of this legislation would be doing it to raise $3.9 million. So it's kind of an incidental that it's on the plus side. It could be a minus 3.9. I think the general reason people carry these, and I used to have a hard time persuading people on this, because the revenue estimates used to show a revenue raiser, and now I'm glad they do not. They actually acknowledge what you said, is that these folks pull out. And because the real impetus behind these bills are fairness to the bricks and mortar that are here paying our taxes and paying all the Minnesota taxes as opposed to other folks. And we have a lot of debate in this committee on picking winners and losers, and this is kind of Exhibit A, picking winners and losers, and people have strong feelings on both sides. But I agree with you. Congress should act. And we've known this, I think, bipartisanly for a long time. Congress is not acting, and they're not acting, and they're not acting. So states are, I think, in a tough position because our Congress refuses to take action on this, and there's a lot of, court cases about it. So I think part of the problem for us is, do we just keep waiting for the Congress to act while our Minnesota businesses have a disadvantage? Or do we do something? And we're part of a group called the Streamline Sales Tax Group, and you may or may not be aware of that. A number of states have banded together to try to get action on this issue and many others. And so I think Minnesota is a leader in tax policy for most states on this issue in trying to balance everything you've said, that the other side says. And now the chair is carrying this bill. But I do think, Mr. Chair, it would be relevant to have our tax staff explain that this bill really is not a revenue raiser anymore, because we've heard this in testimony, and I think I know you a little bit. I don't think you're a fan of tax increases. So this bill is being sort of characterized in the halls as a big revenue raiser for the state. I mean, did Ms. Templin ever walk through that for members to understand how the money actually works in this bill?
Personally, Chesky, I think we did have a description of the bill when we had the proponents, didn't we, this year? And do the money thing. Okay, that might be a good idea too, that just to clear that up. I think that'd be a very good idea. And again, just so you know the intent, you're exactly right. It's not to the revenue raising part, because one could argue it's 3.6 million, 3.9. That's not the issue. Some could say it's zero, and that's fine. The purpose of this bill is just basically to enforce the law, as I see it. And that's what I think we need to do. And it is, it's for the bricks and mortar Minnesota companies there. Are paying property taxes and paying for all those types of things. So you still have the floor, Representative Lencheski.
That's it, Mr. Chair. Maybe it's at a later time because you want to get through testimony, but I do think a lot of legislators in both parties remember the old revenue estimates, and I think if we get to that point, it would be instructive for Ms. Templin to tell us what we thought the bill used to raise and that it's really not a revenue raiser now because of the action that the testifier has just explained to all of us. So thanks for your time.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. I think you're absolutely right, and we will bring Ms. Templin up at some point here to just go through some numbers and what they currently are. I couldn't even tell you right now. So we will do that. And before we get going, we still have some questions for Ms. Hosha. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Dabney moves the minutes of February 16th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Members, you should have in your packets, or you should have the bills that are being referred over to the Property Tax Division. I won't go through each one of these. You can take a look. Those will be in Chair Runbeck's committee. We'll move those over to Property Tax Division. Now, I will move House File 1849. Be laid over for possible. Well, I will when we get there. We're not voting on this today, and there are some amendments, but I'll move the bill so we have it before us at this point. Further questions for our witness, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Hosha, I hope I have that name right. I'm curious if you could describe who your competitors are and how many of them there are, perhaps in Minnesota, but maybe more importantly, nationally, how many other affiliate-type internet companies like yours there are out there?
Lots.
Hosha?
I don't have a number. I've never counted exactly, but, I mean, the internet's a big space. I mean, there are, I will say, you know, nationally, my website is, you know, probably ranked in the top 100 in our niche of sort of the most popular, most trafficked. But, I mean, there are hundreds, you know, and thousands. I mean, there's someone else who would gladly step into my place and sort of squeeze me and my family and those who work for me out.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if this bill passed and we now had sales tax imposed on the transactions that you refer to, Amazon or any other fulfillment house, a consumer who was price sensitive to the point that they were actually looking at the tax situation on their purchase, at least in your space, would literally have 99 other choices on their Google search screen or however they're looking up that product description. There are literally hundreds, maybe if you look across folks that aren't in your niche, there's other niches, there's literally thousands of choices. So you would be one of thousands that would now have sales tax associated with transactions that you're referring, and the other 999 or however many aren't in Minnesota would not. Is that a fair statement?
Ms. Hosha?
Let me sort of clarify, it is, except thinking like about Amazon, someone in Minnesota wouldn't have to pay sales tax on a purchase through Amazon. It doesn't create the fairness, you know, that some may claim, saying, well, I have to pay sales tax if I go to BestBuy.com, therefore I will have to pay it now if I go to Amazon.com. It won't, because Amazon will sever their relationship with me, and so that fairness is not, fairness, quote-unquote, is not created. But if you were to play out a theory that didn't happen and it played differently and the affiliate relationships were preserved and there would need to be sales tax for Minnesotan, then yes, what you're saying would be correct, that there would be other choices.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But just to confirm, regardless of what Amazon does, a consumer who is price sensitive to the point of considering taxes in their purchase decision would still, under this bill, literally have hundreds, thousands of options available to them on their search screen to choose from.
Ms. Hosha?
I'm not sure that I'm understanding. If they live in Minnesota and a company has an affiliate relationship with me, regardless of which website they went to, they would have to pay the sales tax at the point of purchase. Regardless of which website, it's not just that they would shop through my website, they'd only have to pay sales tax if they shop through my website. It's not that. It's any website across the web. If that business had an affiliate relationship with me, anybody who lives in Minnesota, no matter which website they would shop through, if it was an affiliate link, they would have to pay that sales tax. Not even if it was affiliate. Anybody who made a purchase on that website would have to pay the sales tax at point of purchase, which is why the online retailers will sever their relationships so that way that doesn't happen.
Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just thinking from the consumer's point of view, even with this bill passing, regardless of what happens to you, I as a consumer am still going to have dozens, hundreds of non-taxable options to purchase from. There's somebody out there that's selling who's not in Minnesota that I could buy my product from that wouldn't impose a sales tax on me.
Sure, there would be other competitors, right, that you could go through. But whether or not they pay the sales tax is directly related to how those companies, whether they do business with me or not.
Representative Downey?
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Hosha? Thank you very much for coming to the tax committee today. Connie Arnold, FlamingoWorld.com. Connie Arnold. Okay, we'll go to, and members, I want to be very clear about something. There's been a rumor spreading, and this is very serious. The maps are not out. So just please stay, because I think about 1 o'clock there's going to be 201 people kind of disappear. Okay, Jamie Dalton. Jamie Dalton. If you could please join us, sir.
Are they really?
You got it. Please state your name and who you represent for the committee, please, sir.
I'm Jamie Dalton. I represent the Minnesota Tax Freedom Group.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. I have about 9 subtopics that I want to get to. Basically, I have 3 proposals. I want to keep them separate because it is confusing to me and I think to some of the people I've been talking to. The first proposal, I oppose the bill, 1849. The first remedy I have is to amend it to raise the exemption. The second proposal I have is an online sales tax exemption across the board. And the third proposal is a use tax abolishment.
Mr. Dalton, if you could maybe talk about the bill.
Yeah. I specifically divided it into segments for that purpose.
Okay.
The 9 subtopics, and tell me if any of these are out of line, Chairman Davids. About me and what I'm doing is number 1. Number 2 is a brief background to 1849 and some statistics. Number 3 is argument in opposition. Number 4 is addressing the level playing field argument, which I've heard a lot here. Number 5 is my amendment to 1849. Number 6 is addressing Mr. Ennis's February 1st concern over enforcement collection of requirements and abolishing the use tax.
Okay, please proceed.
The other one, then the last 3 I'll cover is abolishing online sales tax, very briefly, affiliates and the current law. So to get into the introduction, this is a freedom issue to me, the most important in my opinion. The right thing to do is vote no on 1849. Short of that, let's allow a $10 million exemption for Minnesota businesses for each of the 50 states. I know that's a big number, and it's bigger than the $10,000 figure. So I want to just let that sink in for everybody. Remember that currently there is no such thing, so even high exemptions bring in new revenue to all the states. The government can subpoena online sales transactions, collect use tax from individual Minnesotans, and in so doing fulfill Mr. Ennis's wildest dreams, as indicated in his testimony. This is precisely why we need to turn it around and define the online transaction as exempt. So about me and what I'm doing, I'm a sporadic eBayer. I have not charged people from other states sales tax for their state. Again, this is a freedom issue related to Minnesota small businesses and the right to continue to export goods to other states in the same manner they've already done. And my fear is that it'll expand beyond affiliate. They're expanding the definition of nexus, and next will be the expansion of affiliate to include small businesses like me. I am not affected by this bill, but I am a small business eBayer. A very brief background to 1849, the story of the Streamlined Sales Tax Project. The member states and supporters and founders, such as Retailers Association, their effort to organize interstate tax defined in the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, as illegal. The state revenue departments want to expand the tax remittance requirements across states. In 2000, I had some statistics here I'll just throw out in regard to small businesses in Minnesota. In 2008, and I got this 2 years ago, the number of business locations in Minnesota that remitted greater than or equal to $17,500 in combined state sales and use tax was 29,939. The total sales and use tax for that group was $4.3 billion. In 2008, the number that remitted less than $17,500 was $129,958. So that just gives you a kind of a thumbnail of what we're talking about here. There are a lot of small businesses in Minnesota that can potentially be affected. Now, arguments in opposition. There are 7 arguments that I presented to each of you as I meet you, and will be sending in an email update shortly with nexus and the subject. Include some of these below. 1849 puts Minnesota small business and consumers at nearly a 10-to-1 disadvantage to other states. Small businesses do not collect tax for and whose consumers do not pay tax to out-of-state affiliates. 1849 has nothing to do with Best Buy or Target, who, by their own admission, will remain unaffected while their competitors are solely affected. People are joining me in making the link between the federal 50-state total of 500,000 small seller exemption and our Minnesota Nexus Bill's 10,000 one-state exemption. So people agree with me that the $10,000 exemption in this bill is linked to the $500,000 exemption at the federal level. Most of the nine states, the recent Nexus laws, have the $10,000 figure in them. Those states are New York, North Carolina, Rhode Island, Illinois, Arkansas, Connecticut, Vermont, California, and Pennsylvania, as compiled by Annette Nolan. Now, addressing the level playing field argument, I've heard several people mention this argument, and I feel that the underlying inference is that some imperiled Minnesota bricks and mortar stores who employ people deserve an unfair tax advantage over the thousands of Minnesota affiliates and potentially thousands of Minnesota small businesses. The presumption is false, dangerous, and damaging to Minnesota. Some major Minnesota storefronts and their jobs may well disappear over the next few years, but it will not be a minor tax advantage. Window shoppers who buy online, home-based businesses, or your vote no on 1849, which will cause their downfall. It will be legal competitive markets and the quality of each retailer's service and products which will determine the winners and losers. What is really going on here is that nationwide, Best Buy and Target are acquiring their own affiliates and finding their own affiliates in other states, selling Best Buy and Target goods in that state, cannot offer tax-free sales because of the physical presence of stores in that state. They are literally facing the brick wall of poor business decisions. An amendment to 1849, again, $10 million exemption per state for affiliates is what I'm proposing. I'll go into that more later, but I think that's reasonable considering Amazon's 2009 sales were $25 billion. Divide that by 50 states, that is $500 million per state. So I think $10 million is more than reasonable for each state as a threshold. And again, Mr. Ennis's February 1st concern, I think abolishing the use tax would address his concern. I can get more into that if you want. Abolishing the online sales tax, I think it would be cheaper than a lot of people expected, given that the disclosure February 1st that Target and Best Buy have about 5% online sales. So if you use that as a thumbnail sketch, that's only $250 million cost if you assume 5% of $5 billion total revenue taken in sales tax by the Minnesota Revenue Department. And one last thing, the current law that I looked up is actually a $100,000 exemption, which I asked your assistant about, and I think it might be a reviser's mistake because I don't remember last year this bill ever passing. So, and it says right on the state website that it passed last year. It's a 2011 bill, and it says that it passed last year, and I have documents that show that in the negotiations and the shutdown that there was no such bill that passed. So I'm a little confused about that, and I think we should just kind of step back from this and examine these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Dalton? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I ask my question, do we want to address the testifier's concerns that he brought up there at the end there about the bill? Perhaps an error from the revisers. Do we want an explanation on that before
Mr.
I ask my question?
Or Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this the section of law that is being amended in this bill was amended in a different way in 2011, but it had absolutely nothing to do with this.
Okay. Does that make sense?
To
the testifier, do you understand that?
Yes.
Mr. Dalton.
Okay, thank you. So to the testifier, and thank you for your testimony very much today. You know, under current law, we have a situation where products and services that are purchased in one capacity are taxed, and those identical products purchased in a different capacity are not taxed. And so either by action or inaction of the government, we are, in effect, giving a competitive advantage to one business over another. I heard your suggestion about abolishing the sales and use tax, and I don't know what the revenue note is on that, but I would say that it's...
Billion.
That's dollars, right? Yeah. So, in a the confines of our $34
billion... $6
billion?
I'm losing
control. We only bring in $5
billion. How much is there, or Ms. Dalton, how much does the sales tax bring in?
Only five billion.
It's only five.
Oh, well, in that case,
rip that
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier, the obviously, if we were to completely abolish the entire sales tax, that would be a dramatic, even if it was replaced with existing revenues, would require a dramatic increase in other taxes that I'm not really sure would be feasible in our option. But my question for you is that under our current law, by the lack of government action, we are in fact providing a preference for a certain type of service delivery or product purchasing over other means. That's by lack of action, that's what we're doing. When the tax code was created, we didn't have an internet.
Are you saying it favors
Just in terms of testifier, usually we speak through the chair, so then when we're done, just address the chair and then me. Trust me, I've done it several times, so you're not the first person. But under current law, when those sales tax statutes were designed, you know, the world has changed. And the world has changed in a way in which our laws have not adapted to it. By our lack of action, we are providing a tax preference. We are making products lower in one means versus the other. And I'm just wondering if you could address that fundamental issue of fairness about how we can address that issue.
Mr. Dalton?
Do you mean the categorizations under 297A where the different product types?
Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier, what I mean is that I can buy a TV online right now and not pay a sales tax, and if I go to a store in my neighborhood, I do pay a sales tax.
Mr. Dalton?
Yeah, that would be affected somewhat by the current bill. I want to remind the members that it cuts both ways, that there are small businesses in Minnesota who would be affected by another state if they enacted a bill similar to this bill. They would force people in Minnesota to collect sales tax for that state. So just remember, if every state adopts this, then it will hurt Minnesota businesses in that way, as well as consumers in Minnesota and small business in Minnesota who are affiliates like the previous testifier.
And Mr. Chairman, to the testifier again, thank you very much for coming today. But obviously you can see that when our statutes were designed, it was in a different world than it exists today. And so for this member's perspective is that we have to modify our statutes. They have to be updated to take into account the changes that have taken place in our world. I know that reasonable people disagree about how those changes should take place. However, I don't think that the lack of action in state statute of addressing these issues and providing tax preferences, which is what our current tax code does, of providing one tax preference for a business over another, is in the best interest of small business or in the best interest of the citizens of Minnesota. But thank you again for coming and testifying today.
Any other questions for the witness? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Dalton.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify against the chairman's bill? Oh, Mr. Lemke, please join us. And before we start, could you please tell us, I believe you're an alumni, you were a Blue Gold?
I was.
What is a Blue Gold?
Blue Gold is a mythological warrior bird with horns, not a small panfish.
You're going to need one. Oh, no. Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Matthew Lemke. I'm with the law firm of Winthrop & Weinstein, and I'm here on behalf of Amazon.com.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
And also for the record, the only thing I like less than a root canal is testifying against the chairman's bill. just a few things I'd like to, for Amazon, we'd like to express, I think, the way we put it on the agenda, some concerns with the bill, Mr. Chairman. You rejected this approach last year when it was introduced as part of the tax increase package put forward to close last year's budget deficit. Despite strong backing of this proposal by Governor Dayton, you successfully joined with the Senate to prevent the sales tax increase from becoming law. There are several reasons why you should again reject House File 1849 and Governor Dayton's affiliate Nexus sales tax proposal this year. Number one, House File 1849, if it becomes law, it will harm small businesses in Minnesota and result in lost income and jobs. The small businesses affected would be those companies who have chosen to participate in Amazon's and other companies' affiliate programs. We talked about some of those, and I just don't want us to lose sight of the fact that those are jobs as well. And we need only look to Illinois, which passed a similar law to House File 1849 last year, for evidence of the impact of that affiliate nexus sales tax will have on small businesses. The New York Times published an article recently describing the negative impact this law will have on Illinois businesses, and I believe that's in your packet. Looks like this, and if you'll note the picture on the front cover of the article, there's a gentleman standing there, a businessman, proudly standing under a Welcome to Wisconsin sign after he just moved his business and 54 employees from Illinois to Wisconsin. He did this despite the enormous expense the move cost him, but he said that the Illinois affiliate nexus law was so onerous that he absolutely had no choice. Wisconsin doesn't have an affiliate nexus law, nor do Iowa or the Dakotas. The Performance Marketing Association, which represents affiliates across the country, has estimated that passage of affiliate nexus laws in 8 states have affected 70,000 of these businesses, which on average have seen their annual incomes drop anywhere from 25% to 35%. We should not add Minnesota businesses to these totals. The second point I'd like to bring up is the constitutionality of a state-enacted affiliate nexus sales tax law like House File 1849 is questionable at best. This constitutionality is currently being challenged in courts in Illinois and New York, and the Supreme Court in 2 past cases has ruled that to prevent disruptions in interstate commerce, a state may force only those businesses with a substantial connection or nexus with the state to collect the sales tax. As I think we all agree, at least when I heard at this table, is a federal solution is the best way to address this issue. The third point I'd like to bring up is that taxation of remote sales is a federal issue, not a state issue, and Minnesota should let Congress act. Congress is currently considering legislation that would give states the authority to make out-of-state retailers collect the sales tax, and by acting before we have a federal solution, you'd be putting Minnesota affiliates at a severe disadvantage. Amazon supports the Main Street Fairness Act as a better solution than a state-by-state action. And let me repeat that. Amazon supports the Main Street Fairness Act as a better solution than state-by-state action. But most significantly, now is not the time to be imposing new tax burdens on Minnesota consumers. We can quibble about whether this proposal is a new tax or not, but the impact is clear. It does raise $3.5 million, and respectfully, you can characterize that any way you want, but the fact is it is a revenue raiser. And finally, supporters of this bill say it is needed to send a message to Congress to act on taxation of internet sales. We think there are better ways to send a message than higher taxes and lost jobs. I think it's somewhat ironic that this bill actually has the effect of doing just the opposite of what some of the proponents are against, which is having government pick winners and losers. And this bill does that, except in this case, it's the affiliates that are the losers. Anyone really wins without a federal solution. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate your time and would stand for any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lemke. We'll go to Representative Dowling, but before we do that, when you mentioned lost taxes and lost taxes and lost jobs, that can cut both ways. If you have retail stores that are closing up because they become showrooms for Amazon, there's lost taxes and lost jobs there also.
Mr. Chairman, that's a very valid point, and that's why we feel that the federal solution is the way to go. Some of the examples that were brought up, I know, especially in the furniture retail world, that's the case where some of these retail brick and mortar establishments are being used as a showroom, and then some purchases are made, especially in the Carolinas. I don't think this bill addresses that, whereas a federal solution would take care of those problems and help those retailers, and that's why we support the Main Street Fairness Act at the congressional level.
Thank you, Mr. Lemke, and for the record, I do too. I support that, but if we're going to sit around here and wait for Congress, we could be waiting a very long time. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lemke, you're here on behalf of Amazon, and I'm curious whether Amazon has any kind of stated position as to what they would do in Minnesota if, in fact, this bill were to pass. Would they do what happened in Illinois, where they severed the affiliate relationships, or would Amazon pursue a different path in Minnesota?
Mr. Lemke?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, it's my understanding that there's a very strong possibility that those relationships would be severed.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Separate question about the neighborhood retailers, the furniture retailers and the like. Is Amazon, from a business model standpoint, actively recruiting them or finding a way to leverage them perhaps as affiliates so that they could in fact make money on purchases that they might intentionally refer to Amazon for fulfillment, you know, thereby reduce their own inventory that they carry, become maybe just more of a showroom for the onlines? Is that a strategy Amazon is pursuing?
Mr. Lemke?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I am not sure I can answer that, but I can get back to you with an answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then another question. I have heard that affiliates are actually considering bundling, and I'm not quite sure how this would exactly work in terms of the routing of the affiliate referrals and how they would end up at a place like Amazon for fulfillment. But my understanding is that the affiliates would become somehow contracted with some bundler who might be out of state or maybe, you know, offshore, and they would actually route their affiliate referral transaction. They capture somebody's attention on the internet and they process their shopping cart or whatever, however this all works, and the transaction referral would actually go through a bundler of affiliates offshore, and then Amazon's contract would be with that bundler, and therefore you'd have a way to skirt the hardwired affiliate nexus that we would have written. You'd get around that virtually. Have you heard anything like that? Are the affiliates starting to think like that as ways to get around this legislation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I think that's the danger of this bill and having a state-by-state approach instead of having a federal solution is you run the risk, I'll use the term risk, of somebody building a better mousetrap and getting around the very solution that you're trying to have for this perceived problem that we have right now in Minnesota without a federal solution. So I think that's probably one of the options that these affiliates are looking at would be a bundling solution or something different that only the federal government probably can deal with for interstate commerce reasons.
Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you. One final follow-up. And so I looked a little bit, and it appears to me that Amazon's business model is, at least for the space that you're trying to occupy and the kinds of transactions you're going after, is wildly more profitable than a lot of your traditional brick-and-mortar competitors who are trying to pivot and become effective and play in the online area, to the extent that it looks like Amazon has literally like 4 to 5 times the revenue per employee and 2, maybe even 3 times the profit per employee than a lot of your big brick-and-mortar competitors who are asking us to deal with this fairness thing. And I think about sales tax and the very small percentage that would add to your cost of a transaction. I mean, if you have those other competitive advantages, why are you even fighting this sales tax issue? Why not just comply and go out and compete on the other business model advantages that you have and call it a day? Why even fight so hard on this sales tax issue?
Mr. Lemke?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I think just the patchwork system, that a state-by-state approach, I mean, there's the administrative burden. I think all things being equal on the federal level, I think Amazon feels that they could compete very well for the reasons that you just stated. But this state-by-state solution, we just don't feel is the way to go about it.
Representative Downey? Thank you, Representative Downey. Representative Kiffmeyer and then Carlson. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Lemke. The question I have for you has to do with the court decision in the 1992 in the Quill case in regards to out-of-state retailers that have a physical presence, which is the situation that we're discussing here. But in the national legislation, it's one of them would be the streamlined sales and use tax agreement. States that simplify their sales tax systems would have the right to make out-of-state retailers collect taxes. So you've mentioned some federal solutions that would be acceptable. This is one of them that was handed out here that is an article from the New York Times. And so I'm taking it from there, but it addresses, if you would address, what is it in a national sales tax that would enable the 1992 Supreme Court decision, how does that interface with national solutions?
Mr. Lemke?
Mr. Chair, Representative, find myself in a unique position after spending hours on working in my past on the streamlined sales tax initiative to try to simplify some of these rules so that Congress could act in some of these ways to have a federal solution. I would have readily admit I'm not an expert on the Quill case, and maybe counsel can answer your question better than I can. But I think probably if your question is to the streamlined sales tax, what that added for enhancing the opportunities to find a federal solution, I think the streamlined sales tax put into place some of these simplified terms and reduced some of the administrative burdens that the Congress might have seen as a burden or a hurdle to passing a federal solution in the past.
Representative
Giffmeyer? Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Well, I understand, you know, the administrative burden. That's just only one of your comments that we have listened to here. But the issue I have is I don't understand how you're still an out-of-state retailer and there's still the physical presence issue. And just because you do some sort of streamlined sales and use tax agreement, I don't know if that resolves that issue. And you're right, Mr. Chairman, this may be something that I'll have an ongoing discussion with that federal solution, whether we'll even work or not. But they keep testifying that they prefer the federal solution. So I want to know what that federal solution is that's all of a sudden going to work. And that's all. But if I need to go somewhere else, Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to do that.
Okay, thank you, Representative Giffmeyer. Maybe Ms. Dalton could address that briefly here.
It
doesn't have to be brief.
I'll try to be brief.
Knock yourself off.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, the Quill decision, unlike a lot of the previous decisions, and if you want a lot of the detail, I'm going to immediately defer to Mr. Michael, essentially did a couple of things. One was it said that the taxation on remote sellers was not a violation of the Due Process Clause, which could not be overridden by Congress. Is only a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause, putting an undue burden on interstate commerce. So, therefore, Congress has the right to regulate interstate commerce, so Congress could essentially overturn all of the court cases that said that you had to have a physical presence before you could have, before the states could impose the duty to collect. That's the layman's understanding of the issue.
Representative Giffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent answer and good information. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Giffmeyer. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I've got a couple of questions. Much of your testimony is focused on there should be a national or federal solution. Has there been any hearings in Congress on legislation to move in that direction for a federal solution? Then I have a follow-up question if there has been.
And Representative Carlson, if you could bring the microphone down a little bit so you're on the record. Mr. Lemke?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I'm not sure if there's been actual hearings. Others might know this. I know that Amazon has been working up at the Capitol at a federal level with some of the larger retail organizations to try to pass a federal solution. Whether or not there's been an actual hearing, I can find out.
So you've been actively, Mr. Chairman, lobbying for a federal solution?
Mr. Chairman, Lemke? Representative, that's my understanding.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's good to hear. Mr. Chairman, the reason I raised that question, we used to have a committee that was called the Financial Institutions and Insurance. And I don't even remember what the issue was, but we had testimony from some in the insurance industry that were going to be impacted by state legislation, that it should be a federal or a national solution. And then during that legislative session, we found out that those same representatives of industry were lobbying in Washington saying that it should be a state solution. So they were playing one against the other. So it's good to hear that that's not happening in this case, then, where your argument is consistent both on the state and federal level. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
And to that point, Representative Carlson, that's a very important question, and I would say that Amazon, the retailers, and others are making a good faith effort to run the Main Street Fairness Bill through Congress. It's just I don't have a whole lot of faith in Congress as far as them being able to get something actually done. Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the only reason I raised that question was that
they don't have a whole lot
bit of history and several references in the testimony that it should be resolved nationally. I'm not advocating at this point one way or the other, just wanted to clarify that there was a consistent message.
Thank you, Mr. Carlton. I believe there is. Thank you. Representative Depke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lemke, you have testified quite a bit that Amazon is in favor of the good faith solution at the federal level. I think probably all of us are thinking about this, but just have some concerns about when it's going to happen. Amazon, being a large business, obviously understanding the ins and outs of the Nexus situation, could you tell us if they are also working on a solution for the small businesses in terms of collecting the taxes, because I believe that the biggest concern that many of these small affiliates have, and you're dropping them, you know, throughout the country, to develop software for them and to provide a service for these small businesses in the event that the federal solution, the good faith solution, is passed and doesn't leave these small affiliates hanging in the balance.
Mr. Lemke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that's a good point, and I'm sure that those discussions are going on, and there's business decisions being made of how to deal with the affiliates, whether or not it's I think those discussions are going on. I don't know how to answer that as far as what they would do with the affiliates other than what's happened in other states, which is they've severed the relationship with the affiliates.
Representative Depke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would think that this is another way for Amazon to recoup whatever they think they're losing with a federal solution or a statewide solution. So in the meantime, I think that we as a state have no other choice but to protect to ourselves in this situation, and we'll go forward with this common sense solution for Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Depke. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier, Mr. was Lemke? Was that what it was?
That's correct, Mr.
Yeah, Mr.
Chairman.
Lemke. Was this your handout on from Illinois?
Mr. Lemke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo. Yes.
Okay. Representative Garofalo.
So it looks like in this situation, Amazon chose to, when the affiliate legislation went through, they chose to drop them. However, in other states, they haven't done that. California, Pennsylvania come to mind. Do you know what criteria they use to determine whether to drop affiliates or not?
Mr. Lemke?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, no, I think that goes back to Representative Depke's question. Those are the business decisions that I'm not privy to. I'm not sure what all went into the decision-making process of when to sever the relationship with the affiliates and when to go a different route. But I can look more into that, and we can have further discussions on that.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, to the testifier, thank you very much. And I think it points out it's worth noting that Amazon does have a choice to keep these affiliate relationships working, and they do have an option here. There's no way in the chairman's bill or in other proposals that we're mandating that Amazon has to drop these things. And if they decide to drop affiliates, they have a choice. In other states, they've chosen to not drop the affiliates and remain profitable, and I would hope that as this legislation moves forward, they would engage in the same behavior here that they have in other states of maintaining those relationships. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Any other questions for Mr. Lemke? Okay, it'd be my thank you. Go Blue Golds. What we're looking at now, members, first of all, for tomorrow's meeting, we're very fortunate to have Commissioner Franz will be giving us an update on the Department of Revenue activities. Thursday, we will wrap up Dr. Wilson's tax incident study report, so we do have a full week here. Tax expenditure report. A few people a little nervous here. Okay, if Ms. Templin, Representative Carlson.
Well, I was just going to, you've referenced now twice the Blue Golds, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
He doesn't either.
University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire, I believe. Blue Gold. You know, and I often wonder with team names, you know, what is it? There's someone was a Zephyr in Blue Golds, and what's that wind one?
The green
wave?
Green wave. Well, some of us watch the maroon and gold, so I understand what you're saying now. I just didn't know what
okay.
it was.
And Georgetown with the Hoyas? Do you know what a Hoya is?
No,
no one does? And who cares? Okay. Okay, Ms. Templin, if you want to know what a Hoya is, former Minority Leader Terry Dempsey and I were out in Washington, D.C., and I can tell you what a Hoya is for the Georgetown. But it really doesn't matter, yes. Okay, Ms. Templin, I thought Representative Lincheski brought up a very good point as to we need kind of an update on, you know, this, in my mind, this is not just about revenues. This is about some fairness and to our Main Street brick-and-mortar retailers. But could you please give us an update on what the projections are for what this would raise, or is it neutral, or do we lose? If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record and present that testimony.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I am looking at a revenue estimate for House File 1849 from January 31st, 2012. I don't know if you have that in front of you. There are two versions distributed.
We don't. We don't, ma'am.
Okay. Well, we can make sure that you get a copy of that revenue estimate in your packet. For House Bill 1849, it shows that the first year there would be a revenue.
Excuse me, Ms. Templin. I guess we do have that estimate. So, members, if you want to take that out and take a look at it, Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, again, looking at that revenue estimate, in the first year there would be a revenue gain of $3.9 million. Of that amount, $3.7 would go to the general fund, and $200,000 would go to the Natural Resources and Art Fund. Fiscal 14, it's $4.97 million. Of that amount, $4.7 million would go to the general fund. And fiscal 15, $5.7 million for revenue gain, with $5.4 million going to the general fund. I should note, for this revenue estimate, it is revenue bases this estimate and the revenue collections using the state of Illinois as our reference point. And they do, in their revenue analysis detail, do show that the estimate assumes that a similar business response would occur in Minnesota as it occurred in Illinois. So they do, we don't know how much, but they do reduce the revenue gain for this estimate by a certain amount. And I, just to kind of look back and get back to Representative Lencheski's comment, in just for reference, in 2009, for a similar proposal, a similar affiliate nexus proposal, the estimated revenue gain in 2009 was $22.3 million in the first year. And when this proposal was rescored in 2010, this proposal was estimated to raise $4.7 million. So now in 2012, you see the estimate before you. It shows an estimated revenue gain of $3.9 million. Again, revenue is looking at the experiences of other states, Illinois and New York, for their model in estimating the revenue gain.
Ms. Temple, would it be safe to say that we better pass this fast because it keeps going down?
Mr. Chair, there's definitely a pattern, yes.
Okay. Questions for Ms. Templin? Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I see the reliance almost exclusively on Illinois' revenue collections. And then back in 2009, we must have done some kind of calculation for Minnesota, trying to estimate how much online sales volume there was out there and how much of it we would actually capture. Do you have at your disposal, or you could get it to me later even, what the estimate of online sales volume was back in 2009 that generated the $22 million? And if, in fact, that's all online sales transactions, or just the portion of online transactions that we'd actually somehow be able to capture the tax on?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, in 2009, revenue, and there are people from revenue here, they use the state of New York as a model because New York and Minnesota had similar tax bases, and that was the best information they had at the time. I do not know if it was all online or just or just the other piece, and I can get back to you about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's apparent that we're basing these on other states' experiences compared to some ability to really know exactly what our total online merchant volume is in Minnesota and how much of that volume we'd actually be able to capture tax on. This is just, we're just assuming through some ratio of size to these other states that this is how much we'd collect.
Any other questions for Ms. Templin? Okay, thank you very much. Members, we do have a couple amendments, and again, we're not necessarily voting on anything today, so let's take a look. You have in your folders the H1849A1 amendment. That is a Drazkowski amendment. If you could please present the amendment. Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This amendment, what it would do is basically offset any anticipated additional revenue that would be brought in through additional sales tax collections with an equal decrease in sales tax collections through a sales tax holiday. And this example, members, is taken from a law that is in place in Louisiana where they have a three-day sales tax holiday for guns, ammunition, hunting supplies, etc. Those items are all listed on lines 1.17 through 1.24 in the bill. So this is an approach. I haven't studied the bill amendment. I mean, I haven't studied the amendment completely, but we've got some preliminary numbers from Louisiana, the Louisiana Legislative Fiscal Office, and I don't know. We would have to certainly adjust for population, that type of thing, and the fiscal staff, Ms. Templin, would do some of that. But in Louisiana, they noticed in state tax collections $35,000 per year reductions in revenue. They were at a 4% sales tax. My real ugly math suggests that that's going to be about $120,000 per biennium when you adjust that for our sales tax rate. And at that rate, it would take about 90 days to collect or to reduce collections by $3.7 million. So this idea or approach, members, is certainly scalable. It's one that we could have several months of sales tax holiday for hunting and outdoor equipment, or we could expand or contract the scope of the exemptions for those items. Certainly could be applied in other areas too, but my preference is for outdoors guns and ammo holiday, members. So that's what this amendment is.
So with on line 1.10, we talk about the purchase. So in Louisiana, this would be the Louisiana purchase. Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Drazkowski, I'm not sure if you're offering this seriously or if this is in jest, because we were told we weren't voting on anything today, so I'm kind of guessing that we're just talking about this and we're not going to actually vote. But Representative Drazkowski, you know, in seriousness, though, I have to say that just on this committee alone, you know, I represent the Mall of America, and the member sitting next to you has Southdale, and then the next one over has Burnsville Center, and we've got Eden Prairie Center here, and, you know, we are seeing these retail... Right. Well, we have the retails, you know, and the chair has a whole bunch of furniture makers. But so, you know, these bills attempt to bring some parity as, you know, in fact, when Representative Downey and I live real close to each other, and Macy's furniture store is, you know, empty, you know. So, I mean, you just go over there and see what's happening there. But to think that, you know, we pass some kind of fairness issue and then give it to the hunters, would you be open to an amendment to make sure that everybody gets your holiday? So how about just a sales tax refund for Minnesotans?
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lincheski, I'm just presenting this as an idea and an option to offset the additional revenue. You know, you need to bring Cabela's into the mall. You really do.
Mr. Chair, they're welcome to come. Bloomingdale's is opening, is leaving, so they can take that spot. But and I think we're moving Mayo Clinic up there next year. So,
WFMC.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lincheski, I have had discussions with Representative Downey. Actually, he may be presenting some ideas. I think he's got maybe a more sound approach than this. But should we not go with something like Representative Downey's looking at? I'd be interested in maybe pursuing something like this as the bill develops.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, in all seriousness, though, I mean, I think the point you're making here is when you do a change like this, it creates some revenue for the state. And so you're saying let's turn it around and make it a tax cut to this targeted group. And I don't disagree with that. I mean, the year I was elected, we had huge surpluses. And what we did is we gave all Minnesotans a sales tax refund. Those were the Jesse checks. And rather than one side spending them or the other handing out permanent tax cuts, we just returned them in rebates. This would be permanent. But But I will tell you just genuinely, I think tax holidays are actually a really bad idea. They don't work, and they actually create a lot of distrust in the system. And states that have them regularly find that people just hang on and don't pay, and then when they just wait for the holiday, and then they're sort of given, you know, the freebie. So I would hope we wouldn't erode our Department of Revenue system through a holiday mechanism. I would encourage a rebate or a refund or a check if the majority, who's certainly in charge of this issue and will pass what it wants this year, I know, I hope you would consider actually giving people checks as opposed to holidays, where people come in and get a holiday on school supplies or hunting supplies or whatever, because generally they really erode the confidence of the in the electorate of a Department of Revenue in any state to believe the system is fair. And I think this amendment shows that. So I think if you guys do end up passing this, I can see there'll be an effort to move the money into tax relief, and I just hope you'll think broader than a few hunters getting a holiday. So, thank you,
Mr. Chair. Representative Lencheski, certainly open to the discussion. The other parts that I didn't discuss, of course, is that I would expect would inspire additional commerce into our state, probably additional income tax and other things that might be included in some sort of revenue reconciliation. Thank you.
Any other questions to the A1 amendment? Representative Drazkowski. Okay.
No, thank
we're
you,
not
Mr.
we're
Chair.
Not voting on these today, so we'll just pull that back for now. Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the chance to bring this forward, like Representative Drazkowski, for some discussion. And the hope with this is that we'd actually enlarge our thinking a bit. One of the things is I've looked into this and had numerous discussions with folks. You know, number one, I think we all support tax fairness. We got these great retailers, and we got this retail sector in Minnesota. They're wonderful corporate citizens. They're some of our shining stars nationally and internationally. And this idea that somehow they are at a competitive disadvantage by virtue of our tax policy is, I think, disheartening to all of us. So I think we all want to find some kind of a solution. I agree with the chair. A national solution is probably ideal, but will it come and will it actually accomplish the intended objective? Who knows? And I fear a little bit that the context of this bill and this initiative is in the interest to find some revenue, and if in fact you turn this on and somehow we're actually able to really capture all of the online revenue later, we could literally be talking tens of millions, maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars. And so I'm not a big fan of turning on a new revenue source without finding some way to cut spending on the other side, offer some tax relief, et cetera, and bundle this in a way that it doesn't seem like just a revenue grab to fuel more spending initiatives. So my biggest concern with the bill as it stands right now is that I honestly don't think in implementation that it will actually create the tax fairness that we're expecting. And the fundamental premise is that people are price sensitive to the point where they would choose to buy something online because of the sales tax difference. And Representative Garofalo mentioned the TV example, and there you're talking about a sizable chunk of money on a you know, $800 or $1,000 sale. You're literally talking $60, $80. And so that probably is big enough to influence behavior. The vast majority of folks, though, don't buy online because of price. You look at all the marketing surveys, 90%+ are buying for convenience and selection and availability. They don't have to go out. It comes to their door, all of these other things. And a very small portion of those, probably not even a third from some of the data I saw, are even really factoring price into their decisions. Free shipping, next day shipping, all of those other things are the reason they're going out there. And so this discussion about a broader competitive climate and dilemma for our Minnesota companies, I think, is very real. And so to think that we can pass this bill and that tomorrow, by virtue of passing it, somebody who is price sensitive won't be able to go out on the internet and buy a TV or buy a piece of furniture from one of thousands of online retailers without paying sales tax, I just don't think is realistic. And so I would hate for us to feel like we actually did something to truly create tax fairness when in fact these online merchants and other competitors are going to find a million and one ways to get around this. And that's, I think, the history that you've seen of the reduction in the revenue estimates over the years, is as states have tried to do this, and many of these states have negotiated with Amazon because Amazon has a distribution facility or has some need for a physical presence there anyway. You know, I think that the sense that we're never really going to be able to capture these transactions for sales tax is a real concern. And you think about the broader picture of wanting to move from taxing income to taxing consumption, which I think many of us agree is probably a move we need to make, and to realize that a big piece of that consumption is going to be really difficult to tax in the future as well. And this is a big issue. And I'd be disappointed if we passed this bill and said, look what we did, because I don't know that we really will have done much of anything absent a national solution. So the bill does a couple of things, the amendment, and I have this drafted as a bill that I'm just offering as a delete all here. It does a couple of things. It goes in the reverse direction and says anyone who's selling merchandise and as a merchant is selling online in Minnesota does not have to charge the sales tax. They don't have to collect and remit sales tax. And so I'm going the reverse, and there's a cost to that. It's according to this preliminary revenue note, which is in your packets, it's about $30 million that we would no longer collect. But what it does on the other, so that would create a level playing field, if you will, between our retail homegrown companies with the Amazons who aren't here, at least in the online space. It doesn't entirely fix the quandary for the local furniture retailer, but it does, at least on the online world, it creates quote-unquote fairness and an equal playing field for our big companies. And then what it also does is it creates a new use tax kind of awareness and potentially a collection capability for the state of Minnesota. And what it says is you can optionally, even though you don't have to, the law says you don't have to collect sales tax on an online transaction, but you can optionally choose to collect and remit it if you'd like, because that's simpler for you. But if you don't choose to remit it, we're going to, as a state of Minnesota, ask you to assist and make your consumers aware that they have a use tax obligation. So you can't just skate around it without educating the consumer. So it says that at the time of pricing and shopping carts and all of the online pages that you see when you go and buy a product, the online merchant who is not going to collect and remit sales tax has to educate with a clear declaration the consumer that they may have a possible use tax obligation to the state of Minnesota. When they send you your electronic receipt in your email inbox, or when they send you the packing documents with the delivery of the product, they would also have to make you aware of the use tax obligation and, you know, provide a link to the use tax form and what have you. And at the end of the year, the online merchant would need to send each consumer a 1099-like statement saying, here's everything you purchased from me. You may have a use tax obligation, and here's the form to submit that use tax to the state of Minnesota. And then we would add the use tax line onto the income tax form. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of cost to the online merchant, but not a lot. I mean, you think they're already doing all this stuff anyway in terms of communication with their customers. And it would hopefully increase use tax compliance and educate consumers that they have that use tax burden. So it's an idea. You could actually add all these use tax awareness ideas onto the chair's bill, probably just as easily as you could onto my bill where we're waiving the tax. But I just think this sense that we're going to be able to nail down this online world, and the analogy I've used, it's like trying to hit a swarm of ants with a hammer. I mean, there's just no way. They can go everywhere, anywhere, and still conduct business. Somebody can move from Hudson to Stillwater and still do their thing and not be taxed under this law. I think this strikes a balance between fairness and opening up commerce. And if we clamp down on this and we push this entire online emerging industry sector outside the boundaries of Minnesota, we will have lost. I mean, this is an industry that is in its infancy still. And if we push literally hundreds, maybe thousands of people out of Minnesota and we don't grow that sector here, I think we'll look back in 20 years and really realize we made a mistake, and that there's an entire Silicon Valley of online marketing and other types of affiliate organizations out there that we will really want to have here in Minnesota. And I fear this proposal, even mine, doesn't fully address the issues that our big retailers and the companies we all love here in Minnesota. I don't know that it does everything, but I really think that the bill as it stands is not going to really do anything and probably make it worse for us for the long haul. So welcome the discussion and appreciate the chance to plead my case and pitch an idea that might have some merit.
Okay, thank you, Representative Downey. And what we'll do is I'm going to ask for if there's anyone who'd like to testify. Then I have a list of folks who would like to ask some questions. But first of all, I owe Representative Kiffmeyer an apology on the Drazkowski Amendment. Your name is right in front of me, and I didn't go to you. Did you have any comments you wanted to make on the Drazkowski Amendment?
Mr. Chairman, things were addressed. I would have passed anyway, so you're just fine.
Oh, I'm off the hook. Ooh, good. Okay, thank you very much. Anyone that would like to testify on behalf of or with concerns on the DE4 Amendment? If not, we would go right into some questions. Mr. Steinhoff, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian Steinhoff from the Minnesota Retailers Association. I've just taken a look at this here for the first time. Representative Downey, I think we really appreciate what you're trying to do here, and I understand what you're trying to do, but this seems to exacerbate the problem even more. There's about 67,000 retailers in Minnesota, 65,000 or 67,000, representing about 20% of the population is employed by retail, brick and mortar. So this would put more of a competitive disadvantage for the brick and mortar retailers because they would have to collect and remit the sales tax if you went to the store. So, you know, in Edina, the Main Street retailer would still have to collect and remit. So there would be a bigger competitive disadvantage. People just go to the website and avoid going to the brick and mortar store. That's what it looks like to me when I take a look at this. So I think we would be against this proposal, but really appreciate what you're trying to do here.
And Mr. Steinhoff, we're putting everyone that wants to testify right now at a bit of a disadvantage because you've just seen this. And
right.
We're not voting on today, yeah. So it'll be a discussion that'll continue. Representative Downey to the Steinhoff comments.
Mr. Chair, I think we all have an interest in providing a fair climate for these local, smaller retail shops. And the reality is it's a tough business. Our big retailers emerged by putting a bunch of small retailers and other unprofitable retail business models out of business. You can go up and down your main streets. I'm guessing if you went back 30 or 40 years, that 67,000 number would probably be twice that, right? I mean, we've all seen it. And so I don't know how you protect those smallest of retailers, how you protect them from the competition of online transactions. And we can try legislatively, but I don't know that it's going to be possible, because the minute we pass this bill, maybe instead of 1,000 options for buying furniture online at no tax, maybe there'll only be 950. But you know what? There's still 950, and if I'm that price sensitive and I don't value what that retailer on the corner is offering, the choice still exists. I just don't. You can argue against my bill a lot. I grant you that, and it's kind of a work in process, even in my own thinking. But the assumption that our bill fixes, or that the bill as it stands fixes this, is just not true. And I think for us to pretend so and feel like we walked out of here as a legislature really protecting, you know, that local furniture retailer, they got much more fundamental business model challenges whether we pass this bill or not. And so I don't think they go away, and it's just a tough business, and they've got to find ways to add enough value to their consumers to keep bringing them in their shop. I don't know why they don't become affiliates for Amazon and fulfill through Amazon instead of carrying all the inventory, you know, in their warehouse in the back. I mean, there's all kinds of business model challenges for these folks, and they don't go away if we pass the bill as it was originally authored.
Thank you, Representative Downey. Mr. Steinhoff, anything else?
I respect where you're coming from, and I think I understand where you're coming from. But why? I think I understand where you're coming from. But why not just get everybody to collect and remit the sales tax? I mean, I think you're trying to go the other way and maybe just abolish the sales tax, which might be great. We would love that issue, but I think that might be a little bit of a problem. And our bill would try to get at that. It doesn't get at the whole solution. I respect that. It doesn't. But it gets us going in the right direction in Minnesota. And it signals to Congress, hey, you know, Minnesota's behind this. Minnesota really wants to get this sort of fairness issue done. The congressional action gets the whole piece of the pie. We get a decent chunk of the pie, and we get a piece of the pie. We wouldn't be working on this so hard if this wasn't very, very important at our number one issue. We have two of the biggest retailers in the country headquartered here, and I think it's very important that we signal to them that this is important to Minnesota, this issue. So that's where I would go with this.
Representative Lewin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really just had a question for Representative Downey, if
that's
appropriate.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Steinhoff? Okay, then I think we'll go to, I see, Mr. Dalton. If you could please join us with some comments, and then we'll go to Representative Loon. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Hello, I'm Jamie Dalton. I'm with the Minnesota Tax Freedom Group. I just want to...
The DE4 amendment.
But
if you could make your comments on the DE4 amendment.
Sure. I would work with the committee, and I like the idea, and I think it's a good idea.
Any questions for Mr. Dalton? Thank you very much, sir. Anyone else like to make some comments to testify? Okay, Representative Loon.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, as always, Representative Downey, you bring a very thoughtful approach to the issues before this committee and others, and it's an interesting idea. I guess I just had a question about, in glancing through this, and if in there, do you address the de minimis exemption that we currently have for use tax online or not?
And Representative Downey?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if I just want to make sure the Representative Loon, we were referring to the $770.
Correct.
Mr. Chair, that stays the same. There are some thresholds for exceptions in reporting where I've left the dollar amounts blank, but that standard, that $770 standard, holds.
Representative Loon?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I was just a little curious about that because I'm wondering if you have a 1099 or something provided and approach us a little bit differently. Would we be opening up consumers for more audits on the use tax and whether or not they're submitting them? That's an issue now, and I'm just wondering if that would get worse under your proposal.
Representative Downey?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, I think it's fair to say that would increase under my proposal. I'm guessing... I don't know what percent of Minnesotans, if you polled them, even know that they have a use tax obligation, regardless of my bill. And so this is at least in part an attempt to increase the awareness of folks to the fact that they actually have that obligation, which they don't, I don't think, have that awareness today, and then to provide them with some concrete information at the end of the year to know whether they've crossed that $770 threshold and actually do need to submit use tax. So, yeah, your point well taken. We're putting an extra burden on consumers now, but they have it today. They just don't know it.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Loon for bringing that up. I was thinking about that, too. Mr. Chair, will you permit Ms. Dalton to take a teachable moment to remind the committee what use tax is and de minimis? Because, honestly, I don't think even our colleagues who don't serve on this committee, much less the public, often understands it. I think Representative Downey has rightfully said most people aren't aware of it, and if they are, they probably don't pay it. But it is something that's a real part of this bill, and it would be an issue if you were to proceed with that.
Yes, Ms. Dalton, a sketch on the use tax.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the use tax is a complementary tax in this state. Most states who have a sales tax have a complementary use tax. Essentially, what it says is if you did not pay sales tax at the time of purchase, you owe a use tax on the items that you are using in this state, that you have purchased for use in this state. In the middle 1990s, I want to say 1997, but I'm not entirely sure of the year, the state had a sales tax study group. And one of the issues that was raised at that time is the fact that very few people actually know about the use tax, and very few people were collecting the use tax in this state. And so, as I'm trying to think who the member was, Representative Phil Carruthers at that time introduced a bill that basically decriminalized use tax for most people by instituting this de minimis. So if your sales tax is
less than 50, your use tax liability is less than $50 a year, which is roughly $770 of purchases, you are exempt from owing use tax. However, if your use tax purchases exceed $770 a year as an individual, you are still subject to the use tax. Businesses do not have a de minimis. Businesses pay use tax on anything that is taxable that they don't pay their sales tax on up front.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I guess I want to come back to some comments by Representative Downey to Mr. Steinhoff, which I thought were very, very troubling comments for small businesses up and down Main Street. And I thought I heard you say that basically small businesses just kind of better accept their fate, that ultimately they're going to die to larger businesses. I thought that's what I kind of heard you say, and I'm very troubled by that. And I think not only those comments, but your amendment here would just speed that up and create a huge disadvantage for the Main Street businesses that we have up and down our smaller towns, especially in rural Minnesota. And I guess I'm not willing to accept that Darwinian philosophy that these small businesses are just not going to survive and ultimately just give in to these larger businesses. And I do think this does create a very unlevel playing field in that you have the brick and mortar, small businesses, employing local people, paying local property taxes, doing all of those things, and now would be at a disadvantage where someone can come in, look at what they want, and then go buy it at internet on the internet without sales tax. So I don't know if I totally understood those comments of yours, Representative Downey, but from what I thought I understood, that is a very troubling message for small businesses around the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, a quick response. So the first response is that if we think we can somehow manage state statute to protect small businesses that are in a very tough competitive landscape, I think we're kidding ourselves. And for us to go out and tell our constituents that we as legislators are somehow going to save their business for them, that's not a promise I'm willing to make. And I think anybody who thinks that this bill, as it is written, would allow them to go back to their Main Street communities and communicate that they have done anything material to help them would also be kidding them. And that would be, in my mind, not an honest statement either. I don't know what the percentage of online transactions, versus standard retail are. But if we're doing $5 billion of sales tax collections in Minnesota and maybe 5% of all retail business is now online, ideally we'd be collecting about $250 million of online sales tax. And this bill is saying we might be able to collect 3.9%. So what we're essentially saying is we're going to maybe take 1%, 1.5%, 2%, of the online competition away from our Main Street businesses, but 98% of it is still going to exist with their tax-free advantages. And so my bigger point is, if the goal of this committee and this legislation is tax fairness and not revenue, then we need to look seriously at whether this bill will actually do a thing to truly create a more fair competitive environment. And I don't think it will, and I think the fiscal estimates and the trend of the fiscal estimates to go down, the testimony we've heard about where these affiliates will go and what Amazon and the other large retailers will do, and the fact that you go out and look for a product, and if sales tax is your deal or tax or price sensitivity is your deal, there's still going to be thousands of options for you. We cannot pass this bill and walk out of here and say that we have created tax fairness for our local merchants. I think that's my biggest point. And actually, I would argue that maybe the requirement for online merchants by law to educate consumers that they have a use tax obligation might be a bigger incentive for those online retailers to just remit and collect tax or might be a bigger corrective to the price sensitivity of folks who aren't going to buy at the local furniture shop, knowing that they're going to get a statement at the end of the year telling them they got to submit use tax and go through that whole process. Maybe they will just buy it off the shelf at their local retailer as compared to going online. So I think compared to the alternative, I actually think my bill would probably do more to creating fairness for those folks than the bill as it currently stands.
Ms. Hilden, welcome to the tax room. Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nancy Hilden, and I'm here on behalf of Target. I just want to get on the record here, basically, that we are concerned that all this respect to Representative Downey's proposed amendment, we believe that it is directly counter to your bill as introduced. And I would want to underscore that there is a serious jobs impact on the unfairness in how we are treating different businesses right now. And I will submit to you, Mr. Chair, a study from the state of Arizona that shows the job loss in Arizona, and happy to provide that to all committee members. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Hilden? Okay, with that, we'll wrap it up here. And again, tomorrow, Commissioner Franz, Thursday, Dr. Wilson. And members, may all the new lines be fair. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.